Welcome to the Kiki's Big Adventures Family Travel Podcast, here to help inspire and plan your family's next big adventure. Kiki's Big Adventures all started with the award-winning picture book series starring Kiki, the globe-trotting cat, exploring the world's diverse places, people, and cultures. I'm Shannon, the author and creator of Kiki's Big Adventures. Moms and families loved the books and asked for help planning their own adventures. So the podcast was created to help. Adventure awaits! This podcast is brought to you in part by AAA Travel. AAA's travel advisors are knowledgeable family travel experts who can help you plan your perfect family vacations. We're proud that Kiki is the official mascot for AAA Family Travel, and together we're helping foster the love of travel for your whole family through engaging content, fun family activities, and global education. Visit AAA.com/family-travel today or contact one of AAA's travel advisors who will help you create memories that will last a lifetime. I am so excited about today's guest. This is a travel mom. And when I say travel mom, this mom does some serious traveling. And she is a dear friend who I've known for quite a while. We used to work together in Europe. Welcome to the podcast, travel mom Trudy.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I think we've known each other for 16 years.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, since we were living in Amsterdam.
It's crazy. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Thanks, Shannon. I'm Trudy. I'm British, as you can probably tell by my accent. I have lived all over the world with my job, very luckily. And currently I live in Seattle with my Canadian husband and our two American kids who are aged 8 and 10.
This is going to be a really interesting conversation. I'm really excited about it. I looked at her pictures for years while she was living in China. And of all times, dear goodness, during the pandemic.
I know, right?
We haven't had anyone on the podcast yet to talk about China. And as Trudy has told me, it being a pandemic led to them exploring China a lot more than they probably would have otherwise had they been able to romp around Asia. So gosh, let's talk about China. How long you were there? What'd you do?
So we moved to China in June of 2019. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. And we lived there for 3 years. Actually, we signed up for 2 years and I ended up extending for an extra year because this may surprise people. We were enjoying it so much. It was interesting. I organized a kind of a pin board before we went to China to get the boys excited about the move and adventures. And it was, you know, I had it kind of made for us specifically on Etsy. And it was like, you could put different color pins for all the places around the world you want to go visit. We all got to put pins on there. And then as we would travel, we're like, okay, and here is a different color pin for the places that we'd actually be as a family. It's just a family travel board. We have to all have been to the place, all four of us, in order to put a color on that.
That's cool.
That was the plan. We had pins all over Asia because we were going to explore Asia while we're living close, while we're in the continent. And then our first trip, actually, our first kind of Golden Week holiday, which is of the fall of 2019, we went to Northern Thailand and that was amazing. And then we had lots more trips booked. We were going to go skiing in Japan and had a Bali trip booked and all these things. And then obviously January of 2020, actually we made it to Australia and then got stuck. We were luckily able to get back into China in March of 2020, but then couldn't leave. So the border closed and it was, we could leave, but we wouldn't be able to get back in. And it was our home and where my job was. So we then were like, okay, we can't leave China. But actually, because COVID was very tightly controlled within China, we had a lot of freedom within the country. And so I would say the biggest silver lining of living in China during COVID for us was that we really got to explore China in a way that I don't think we otherwise would have done because we were focused on Asia.
Right.
And in reality, we'll go back to Asia at some point, but would we go back to these places in China? Probably not. And actually, some of our favorite travel experiences ever were while we were living there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where were you based in China?
We were living in Shanghai. And there's two really good airports there. One is like more of an international, but then there's a local airport. We live 15 minutes from Hongqiao Airport, which is mostly domestic flights. But it meant it was really easy for us to jump on a plane and go to places. Also, the other thing is like the rail network is really strong in China too, like high speed trains, the maglev, super high speed. Like it feels like you're kind of floating on cloud.
Wow.
It's one of the fastest trains in the world. A lot of new infrastructure. I think that's what was interesting for me too, especially coming from the UK, was there's a lot of deep like history and the infrastructure can be challenging sometimes. Mm-hmm. In China, so much of the country has really been built up in the last 50 years. Last 20 years, even in some places. And so, you know, the roads are great for traveling on. The train network's really strong. Lots of new airports all over the country. So traveling within China logistically is pretty easy.
That's cool. So tell us about some of your favorite family trips.
The top one that always springs to mind is Yangshou, which is very close to Guilin. Sometimes people have heard of Guilin, but not usually Yangshou. But Yangshou is on the side of the Li River. There's lots of outdoor things like hiking, but it's very easy. Actually, hiking in China, I would say, is very accessible. They tend to build steps and wooden platforms and things into it's not like your wilderness hiking. It's you see people at the top of these mountains in heels. It's a different type of hiking, but it's easy with kids, right? It makes it really easy and safe with a family, which is a bonus of it. So there's mountains, there's outdoor stuff. The hotel we stayed in, which I really recommend, the Yangshou Mountain Retreat, which actually is a National Geographic kind of recommended hotel, but it's on the banks of the Li River. And one of the benefits is that the staff there can speak English as well as Chinese. That's one of the biggest challenges of traveling within China, honestly, is that even in Shanghai, it's hard to find people that speak English. Once you get outside of the big cities, forget it. It's really challenging. And the hotel was great. That was one of the trips where we really did it on our own ourselves. And the hotel helps us a lot with booking stuff. Otherwise, I would say in China, you need to use a tour guide. And there are lots of them and they're really well set up and they have someone who can speak English and they can customize tours and not super expensive to do it that way. They're pretty affordable, but the big trips that we did, we always used a tour guide. But for the Yangshou one, we were able to kind of do it ourselves, just leveraging the hotel. And there's like mud caves you can go to. But I think, honestly, one of the things I just loved about it was it's absolutely beautiful. The topography is like nothing you've ever seen. It looked really foreign. It was just really relaxing. And as a person, I don't easily relax. And there was something about the vibe there where I got there and instantly I was like, okay, this is just chill. Even when we were doing lots of outdoor things, and it's pretty humid and hot in the summer there, which is when we went, but it was still like the hotel had bikes that you could rent with kid seats and helmets. We biked up the side of the river and then we went rafting down the river. We went to see this incredible kind of evening like light show on the water, which was just stunning. The person that helped organize the opening ceremony for the Beijing Olympics is behind it. It's absolutely stunning. So there were just lots of unique experiences and it was easy to do.
Yeah.
And particularly that hotel, they also had both a Western menu and a Chinese menu, which, you know, when you're traveling with kids who are not the most adventurous, despite having lived in different countries, to know that, okay, I could just ask for a plate of cucumber or they'll do some fries or whatever it is really helpful.
Yeah, I would have to think with picky eaters, that might be a little difficult.
Yes, it can be. At least I know they'd always eat rice. I was like, okay.
We've always got the carbs.
It might get scurvy, but at least they won't starve.
Scurvy.
The other thing, China itself is so diverse.
That's the thing that I was amazed looking at your pictures.
Oh my gosh, the landscapes, the geography, the cultures, even within China, just phenomenal. At one point, we were close to the Russian border in a city called Harbin, which is like, I think it's like minus 22 degrees in the winter. I mean, you really need to be dressed for the weather, but it's like they have this ice and snow kind of sculpture parks that they build every year for like 2 months and then it kind of melts and then they build it again the next year. And it's just incredible. And it's so unique. But also, one minute you're looking at ice sculptures near the Russian border. And then another trip we did that same year was riding camels in the Gobi Desert. Who knew, right? And this is all in China. So I'd say that was my other kind of really memorable trip that the kids still talk about now is the Silk Road trip. So the kind of famous Marco Polo kind of Silk Road, which actually goes all the way from Europe through Eastern Europe, into Asia, China. And we just did a small section of it. We started in a place called Dunhuang, which in hindsight, I would have stayed an extra night because we did a lot. We had a tour guide who took us through the whole thing, which was essential. We couldn't have done this trip without a tour guide. But Dunhuang is where Marco Polo lived for a period of time. It's interesting because there are no Western brands there at all. I'd say for half that trip, we didn't see any Western brands at all.
Nice.
Which is incredible. To us, it's still a city. It's like a couple of 100,000 people. But by Chinese standards, it's a village. I mean, your average city in China that like Tianjin, that like most people have never heard of, is like 13 million people. Like Suzhou, 10 million people. Again, you know, most people haven't heard of them. So to have 200,000 people is really, it's a village. But it was just, they had this incredible like night market and food markets. The people were just so, traveling all across China, people are incredibly friendly, approachable. They're fascinated by Westerners, particularly when you get to some of these out of the way places because they've never seen a Westerner. They want to have photos taken with you. My youngest son's really blonde and he was a big highlight for photos. But it's all in a lovely, curious way. The intent is lovely. I would also say that families are revered, children are revered. And I think this is a consequence of the one child family policy that was in place for a while when you think about it, you have grandchildren that have four grandparents and they are the only grandchild. And so children are special and precious. And so wherever you go, people are happy to see them. Like restaurants, they're happy that kids are there. Like people are not annoyed that families and children, like they truly like love it. And they get great excitement and smiles on everybody's faces. And so that's really lovely. And that was very true on the Silk Road trip because we were really in out of the way places. We got off the flight, went to the hotel, dumped our bags, and literally went straight out to the Taklamakan Desert, which I think is the third biggest desert in the world. I'd never heard of it before I went there. The Taklamakan Desert, it borders the Gobi Desert,
okay.
Which I also previously never realized was in China. And then we were riding camels in the Taklamakan Desert, which was just incredible. And there's like a crescent lake there. It's like an oasis. Like there's actually water in the middle of this desert. It's
wow.
Stunning. And it's a crescent shape, so they call it Crescent Lake. So we did things like that. There were like caves that are a couple of thousand years old, more in some cases with carvings and artwork that were all uncovered like maybe 50 years ago. They discovered a lot of this stuff. And then we went to Lanzhou, which is a slightly bigger town. That was our first time where we came across some Western brands. I think the kids have never been so excited to go to KFC and Starbucks ever. And to be fair, the parents were pretty excited as well by this point. And then we ended in Xi'an with the Terracotta Warriors. It was a 10-day trip in total. It was interesting because when you start in these smaller places, you don't have big chain hotels. So we were staying in really small, basic places. And it was all taken care of and organized by our tour guide. And then we had a little minibus for some of the trips. And then we did a train. It was like planes, trains, automobiles.
Right.
Yeah. And you're moving along the trail, the Silk Road. That's the kind of journey that you're recreating. Xi'an and seeing the Terracotta Warriors was an incredible kind of end to it. And I would say if anyone ever goes to Xi'an, and I know a lot of people, it's a highlight if they go to China, you see the Terracotta Warriors, which is amazing, although very busy and lots of people. But one of the highlights we did was our tour guide then took us to kind of a little place, like a 20-minute drive from the main. So we saw all the kind of main Terracotta Warriors. And then we went to this smaller place where the kids could actually recreate making their own. And then they got to actually make their own little Terracotta Warriors. And then we left them there to be fired up. And then they got sent to us in the post afterwards. And we have them still. And it's like, that was a highlight for us. And it was very personal.
Right.
And, which was really nice after the insanity of hundreds of thousands of people looking at the Terracotta Warriors. So that, the Silk Road Desert and Yangtze were probably my two kind of highlights. And then Shanghai itself is just amazing. And we got to experience that. Every weekend, we could do different things. I think what was interesting is because we lived there, we explored so much of it. We knew we were only there for a short space of time. But it was interesting because I then realized I'd lived in Seattle previously, and then we came back to Seattle. I'd never really explored Seattle in the same way because you kind of take it for granted when you're there. Like when I lived in London.
Right.
You take for granted it's always going to be there. And so it did make me come back with a reinvigorated passion for, okay, let's explore where we live. and go out and see some of these things and explore on a deeper level, even if it's just like a Saturday morning or a Sunday afternoon, give me a renewed appreciation. You don't have to get on a plane and go somewhere to explore as a family.
Exactly. And to see something new and to try something new. That's what we always talk about. Yes, we have exotic places on the podcast, but you can have great experiences close to home. So much to explore.
Yeah, 100%.
We enjoyed a lot of Amsterdam, though, I think, when we lived there.
Yes, we did. And I went back there with the boys this summer and tried to relive my single days in Amsterdam.
They enjoyed it, right?
They loved it. Mummy drank a lot of Prosecco and the boys had a great time too.
That's so fantastic. I loved it. I loved seeing them like running around and riding bikes.
It was really cool.
Okay, so lots of travel. So you're bound to have some good tips to share with families.
Yes. My number one is snacks.
I love that.
There is nothing worse than hungry kids. Or hungry parents too, but hungry kids in particular. And this was especially important when we were in China because you never knew when you could get Western style food. But I would say it's something, even here, you can be more intentional, planful about the kind of snacks you want them to eat. And so wherever I go here, I always have a little kind of baggie with snacks that I have in the cupboard, and wherever we're going out, I just pull the little baggie out and I stick it in my bag and we're good to go. Whether you're on kind of road trips or wherever. Planes, oh my gosh, because on the plane you never know what you're going to get and if they're going to like something. Airports, all of that stuff. I'm just like, snacks, snacks, snacks.
Make sure. Gotta have some food for them.
It's the happy. Games is my other. So I think three. It's snacks, games, and wipes. So snacks number one. Games number two for sure. And it's little games like the matching games or the little card games like Go Fish or Uno or just a regular pack of playing cards. The number of things that, the number of amazing memories that I have of playing little card games with the kids, either on a plane, in an airport, in a restaurant. It's actually, they're some of my favorite memories, playing Go Fish or Old Maid or something in one of these random places. And sometimes on the travel, they are some of my favorite memories. There's moments together as a family, particularly like in a restaurant, you're waiting for food, just getting that little card game. And I feel like the conversations we have are just fun.
I love that, right? It's not about pulling out the screens to keep them occupied.
It's really easy to do. But even now, 8 and 10, they still want to play games because it's like our thing, right? It's become our thing. So I love that. And you don't need a ton of space, right? There's a series called Top Trumps, which I don't know if people in the US are so familiar with. In the UK and England growing up, we played Top Trumps all the time. And so I've introduced my family. You can get them well-known stores or on Amazon or whatever. But usually like at Christmas, it's one of our kind of family stocking fillers. We get a new Top Trumps kit. So there's like soccer players, Disney movies, dinosaurs and Avengers or whatever. But that's a really easy stick it in the bag kind of game too. And then wipes, just because, I mean.
You always need wipes. I don't care what age you are.
Do you know what? It's funny because before kids, I wouldn't have ever thought about having wipes. And now whether the kids are with me or not, I feel like it's essential.
Exactly.
You know? And also when you're traveling in some of these crazy places too, like you don't know if the bathrooms are going to have what you need. Very typical actually in China when you're traveling, the toilets are squat toilets, not a regular toilet. And so having all of the tissues and wipes. So yeah, snacks, games and wipes make for a much happier traveling experience, in my opinion.
I love it. Those are very simple things. So being a big traveler yourself and having taken the boys on many adventures, why do you think it's important to travel with your kids?
So one of the things I feel really passionately about with my kids, actually it was a passion for us as a family, was we want to raise global citizens. We already have three nationalities in our family, so that's probably a starting point for why we felt really strongly about this. That was definitely a driver of moving to China. It was like, okay, we need to help them have a different perspective. But I think the travel is a huge part of that. Broaden their perspectives, learn about other cultures, develop curiosity, you know, oh, let me learn more about that. I wonder why they do that. Let's figure that out. All of those for me are about helping them think as global citizens, which I think is especially important, being adaptable to different situations. So when you're traveling and things don't go to plan, it's actually okay. Like it's a good lesson. Okay, so how do we figure this out? Like nothing ever goes to plan perfectly. And if you want it, you set yourself up for failure if you're expecting travel to be perfect because you're reliant on so many other people. But I think you all learn to be like good problem solvers, adaptable, dealing with ambiguity, all those kind of things. And then I think the other thing for me, which I hadn't expected at the outset of us really starting to travel, but the family bond is so strengthened. We have these experiences together that we get to talk about. And then when I document it and was able to turn that into books, actually, and seeing the kids go back and look at those books and the trips that we did and then re-talk about it and the memories, the family bond and the bond between my sons too, because they're each other's friend. And we've been on trips with other families too, which we also really like. And I'm a huge fan. It's just, I will also caveat with, for the first couple of years, we didn't travel at all because the thought of getting on a plane with two small children and the jet lag and all of that was, quite frankly, a nightmare. But I think when they got to like 3 and 5, was that kind of sweet spot of this is totally doable. You just need those tips and tricks. You got to have a bag with all the things you need and then you're good to go. Yeah.
I love it. Trudy did such a good job while she was in China for all of us that were interested and eager out there. You'd do a month or a week?
Every week.
Post? Every week in China.
I know. It started as a week and I was like, I'll do this for the first year and document it. And every single picture had a story. And I was very careful about curating. It was like 15 photos a week.
Yeah.
So, you know, that saying, if I've ever had more time, I'd write a shorter letter. It's true. I spend a significant amount of time curating the photos because I didn't want to have 40 photos. I wanted it to be interesting, easy to like just dive in and out of. And then, yeah, like there are so many great apps now to be able to turn social books into an actual book. That was my plan at the beginning too. But then I did it once a week for the first year. And then everyone was like, especially because then COVID hit. And of course,
right,
came even more interesting because we were in China. Then everyone was like, oh, you've got to keep doing this. So I ended up doing it every week for 3 years.
It was so great.
Now I'm doing it once a month.
It was so great because the things that you're talking about, I never would have seen, right? If
yeah,
you hadn't totally shared that. And then you've got those great
yeah
memories as a family to be able to have documented.
Yeah, the other thing that was interesting for me too is I remember when I first moved to the US, lots of things felt culturally very different. It was a bigger culture shock than I expected because you kind of speak the same language most of the time. But culturally, it was a bigger culture shock than moving to Amsterdam. And I remember then things normalize over time, right? Quite quickly, actually, things normalize and you forget. And so some of the reason I wanted to document the China experience was I wanted to remember those things that felt really weird because they do normalize over time. And so, yeah, that was a big part of it too. And that was interesting because then we had the culture shock all over again when we came back to Seattle.
I can imagine.
Especially because we came back to Seattle post-COVID. So that was different too. It was like the pre-COVID and post-COVID Seattle are very different. So yeah, just being able to document those, especially with the kids as they get older, being able to look back and go, oh my goodness, do you remember? Wasn't that amazing?
Love that.
Yeah.
And so I know that you travel all the time for work. We were arranging this while you were on your way to, where were you headed?
I was heading to Tokyo, yeah.
Tokyo, yeah. I know one of the last things you really want to do is go on a trip, get on a plane, but I know Brent does. So what's the next big trip you're either dreaming about or planning?
There's a couple. So this is on the bucket list. I don't know how soon we'll do this, but at some point we will. So when we were in China for the April of 22, we had planned a big trip to Yunnan and Tibet. We had it all planned out because you can do that easily in China. And it just looked incredible. And everybody is like, it's one of the special memorable visits. And then we had the big Shanghai lockdown where we were locked in our house for 77 days. And so we were not able to go. That's a separate podcast. So we were not able to actually make that trip, but we have it all planned out. And so at some point we will do the Yunnan and Tibet, but probably in a few years, I think. And then the other thing on our list that I think will happen next Christmas, we want to go to Lapland.
Where's that?
Wells. I don't know if this is a British thing, but everyone's
probably
like, because it's probably nearer, but you're like, you go to Lapland because that's where Santa lives. Santa Claus lives in Lapland at the North Pole. Now it's actually officially in Northern Finland, but in the UK, there's lots of like charter flights where you can just jump on a plane easily. And they even like dress the planes up as reindeers and all kinds of crazy things. And there's different trips you can do. So if any of your listeners have top tips, because I'd like to do a luxury version of
luxury Lapland.
And I wanted to try and go before the kids still believed in Santa. I think we're losing that I think last Christmas was our last opportunity for that. So they're going to know it's not real, but I think they can still feel the magic and it will still be amazing because you actually go and see Santa at the North Pole and they have all these experiences and you can go dog sledding and snowshoeing and all of these things. So that is one of the trips. So we'll probably go back to the UK, see family and then do a Lapland trip from there. And you can see the Northern Lights. At the same time, Northern Lights is a bucket list.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of...
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are some good kind ones.
Looking for top tips on Lapland.
Top tips. Okay. We'll see what you get out there.
Thanks.
We'll put out a call.
Luxury Lapland is what I'm looking for.
I love it. Well, Trudy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing just a little sampling of your incredible adventures.
Thank you for inviting me. It was so fun to see you and chat with you again, too. Miss you.
I know. And I was so happy to see the boys pulled back out their Kiki books when they got back home. And
that was really exciting. And because my youngest son, when we're in Shanghai, at the British school, he had like a ton of Dutch friends in his class. And so he then became an honorary Dutch bro with all these little six-year-old kind of Dutch kids and Bowen. And so he developed this like passion for all things Netherlands. And so like last year, obviously we gifted him with the Amsterdam book, which he was thrilled with. And then because Anders wants to be a paleontologist and the Natural History Museum in London is one of his favorite places in the world, I got him the London book. And so both of them were like, it was really unique and special to each of them. But they already knew Kiki because we already had the Greece and the Rome books. And so, yeah, it was cool that it worked out perfectly for them.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, my dear.
Thank you for joining us on the Kiki's Big Adventures Family Travel Podcast. Visit the episode webpage for all the details from today and lots more travel planning resources. We look forward to traveling with you on the next episode. Adventure awaits!